Securities and advisory services are offered through American Independent Securities Group, LLC, and that the radio station is not affiliated with David Martin or AISG, LLC.
So happy it's Thursday. Welcome, ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin.
And myself, Ryan White. Only three of us today. Usually there's four. We doubled up on Dave's, though.
Well, when you have, like, you know, 3 hours worth of material, you can't have four guests in the studio.
We have with us today Dave Martin, financial consultant with AISG. AISG. Dave, welcome.
Thank you. Great
to
be here.
What does AISG stand for?
American Independent Securities Group.
American Independent Securities Group. Got it. And you're a financial advisor, right? That's
yes.
What you do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. So ahead of us today, we've got, six or so questions here, starting with what were the decline of the real estate market, to where's the real estate market going, to where is interest rates going, and what I think is one of the most interesting, what are the long-term risks of being a renter? And this is a home renter you're talking about, renting property as opposed to owning, correct?
Absolutely.
So an action-packed show ahead of us today, and frankly, we're going to start, with maybe the big one there. What were the causes of the real estate decline? And that's a very loaded question.
I think the causes for the real estate decline have many facets to it. But I think that the main cause is a natural end of the credit cycle. Whereas, banks continue to loan more money and lower their credit quality of the
underwriting guidelines.
The underwriting guidelines.
The loosening of underwriting guidelines.
And that,
really?
We all witnessed it. We were in a period of free money. Anybody could get a loan. And you had people doubling up and buying more than one home.
I saw people were buying multiple million dollars of real estate in the same month so that when one bureau was pulled to get a mortgage, the other mortgage company pulled the bureau and it wouldn't see that new loan was on the credit yet. So if you close $2 million homes in the same month, your debt-to-income ratio looks a whole lot better than if you close one the previous month. I mean, people were literally working the system, and it had to fail.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And many, many instances of that were going on. But that's what happens at the end of a credit cycle. Banks are just desperate to increase profits until the whole thing collapses. And the builders also built into that. They're building into a demand that was artificial, a demand of people buying homes for speculation,
well, sure.
Not actually to live in.
Well, what was happening is people were camping out to buy real estate.
Absolutely.
And
not to live in.
They were reserving properties. Like, I remember camping out at multiple places looking for houses, And it was a frenzy. It was, and people were buying up. Because if they didn't buy up, they felt like, if I don't do it now, when I need it, I won't be able to afford it based on the fact that homes are going up by 1% a month.
Absolutely.
Well, you said it was the natural end to a credit cycle. What does that mean? What's a credit cycle?
Credit cycle is where, like right now, we're at the beginning of the credit cycle, where lending is very tight and very difficult to get a loan. But as the economy improves, as real estate starts going up in value, banks will start to loosen their credit availability, and they'll loosen their credit.
I'm excited about that,
and we're seeing some of that right now. It's easier to get a loan right now for a home than it was a year ago.
Sure,
much easier than 2 years ago.
Sure,
it feels a little bit like the takeaway close, right? If you can get in now in the beginning, you're going to be able to ride this appreciating.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Merry-go-round.
It's similar. The last credit cycle was the S&L crisis. We were in a period of free money. And real estate had gone up through the 80s, booming. I remember thinking the same thing in the late 80s that people thought in the mid-2000s. I'm never going to be able to buy a home because the prices just keep going up and up and up. And then the whole thing collapsed at the end of that credit cycle. So we're kind of similar right now to probably the early 90s as our position in the credit cycle. And over time, banks will start loosening their credit standards.
So the natural progression here is
it'll
obviously
be the natural progression.
Tight to loose with respect to the
loose,
lending guidelines.
And eventually the whole thing will collapse again down the road. But it's a long cycle.
It's a very optimistic approach.
It's a realistic approach.
Look, knowledge is power, right? I mean, I watched investors, we call them smart, call them, intuitive, but, they had millions of dollars in real estate, sold it in 2004, right? They left a little bit of money on the table. Maybe they didn't nail it in 2005, 2006, but they got out. They took a ton of cash out. I mean, who wouldn't want to go back and figure out, okay, what would you do if you knew what you know now? Would you sell everything and rent? Might not be a bad option. But if you know how to do that, which is what you're going to get around to telling us, you're going to show us ways that you can see what may be happening. And if you've got some of these indicators that you might decide, well, you know what, it's time for me to get out. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. You have to look at the value of real estate as the best valuation I look at to determine whether it's overpriced or underpriced is the cap rate. And for those of you that don't know what cap rate is, it's simply the income that you receive from investing in real estate. If you were to buy a $100,000 home and your income was $10,000, that'd be a 10 cap because you're making 10% on the $100,000. As the real estate goes up, the cap rate goes down. So if that home went from $100,000 to $200,000, but you still only were making $10,000, your cap rate would now be 5%.
Well, the cap rate's only one part of the puzzle.
It's probably I believe it's the most important part.
Well, sure. I mean, return
Absolutely.
On the money. And what
even,
I like
even
about
if you're
that
not
approach,
renting out the property, what you could rent it out for on the purchase and what your cap rate is on a purchase, even though you have no intentions of renting out, is an indication of value and something you should pay attention to.
But you also have to back out your expenses and you know,
that would be net income.
Net income on the property is the number you use to divide by the value.
Exactly.
To come up with a percentage that, but more important than that number is what you compared it to, right? And you compared that number to.
Oh, you compare that to what interest rates are at the time. You compare it to 10-year treasury.
10-year treasury.
So in the heyday, you know, cap rates in San Diego were, I mean, it was hard to find anything above a 3 or 4. So.
And by heyday, you mean 2004, 2005, 2006,
yeah.
When everything was inflated.
When everything was
cap
inflated,
cap rates go down.
Cap rates were at 3%, 4%, and we had a 10-year treasury for 4-5%.
And that's because the values of the properties have come up,
exactly.
and the rates, the rental income stayed about the same.
About the same.
That's the inflated portion.
So you can see with that little chart, that little math equation, that home values were overpriced.
Way
overpriced. Therefore make a decision, okay, it's time to get out. Or if it's the reverse, if you see the cap rate is higher than the 10-year treasury, it could possibly be an indication that the economy's healthy and property values are going to continue to go
up.
Well,
not necessarily that the economy's healthy, but that that valuations are good at that time.
So hang on.
Real estate isn't overpriced. It's not that different than a P.E. ratio. Very similar in terms of evaluation method.
Similar.
Yeah,
similar valuation.
There. Got it.
I don't think enough agents take into consideration that when they're working with investors, when they're working with buyers, because in the residential realm, there's a lot of emotion.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, rarely is it that I have a discussion, you know, about what the return on this investment would be, whether or not it's overvalued or not. Not to say that I wouldn't look at the comparables and make a judgment based on value. But when you got somebody or, you know, one partner or another is emotionally attached to that property and they got to have it, they might pay more money for it.
Well, generally people look at valuation as, is it a deal compared to the neighbor's house?
Sure.
Exactly.
Residential real estate, absolutely.
Other property.
Right.
And but is it a deal?
Is it average? Am I not going to be the sucker? Right?
Is it a deal compared to other investments?
Right.
Is it? Would you rather own a home at 3% cap rate or a 10-year treasury at 5? That's risk free. You know, it doesn't make sense. And that's where we were in the heyday.
You know, and furthermore, I think a lot of buyers won't necessarily look at historical sales. Right. Maybe you're the one that does, but people will look at what's available. Like if I'm going to go out and buy $1 million worth of real estate, I got $1 million to spend. I'm going to look at other $1 million houses and I'm going to pick the best one. That's the one. And I know in my gut what $1 million buys me. And that's how people do the evaluations for the most part.
For the most part. Because, you know, if you're looking at cap rate value, they're slow moving. You know, they're slow moving on the way when real estate's increasing. They're fast moving when real estate's declining. But, you know, cap rates may stay the same for 3 or 4 years and just trickle up or trickle down. So it doesn't have it. If you want to buy a house today, it really doesn't have much impact on if you have already decided to buy a house today. Where it has the impact is, you know, on the macro trend, on the big picture, long term, are we in a state where housing is way overvalued and about to decline?
What's our cap rate right now?
Cap rate right now on residential real estate, on average throughout the country, is 6 to 7.
National
varies
average.
Widely where regionally.
And so the 10-year Treasury?
10-year Treasury is a little under 3% right now.
Okay, so looking healthy.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Cap rates are about double the 10-year.
And that fact might be one of the reasons we are looking at an inventory shortage. Does it make sense?
I don't think that's the reason that we have an inventory shortage. I think we have an inventory shortage right now because the decline set up the shortage. And you know what? When real estate started to decline, what's the first thing builders did?
Quit.
They stopped building.
Yeah, they can't.
They stopped building. So you have takes a long time to build a house. Mm-hmm. Most people believe that, you know, if they decide to build, a house will be built and a year later we'll have the inventory. But the process is much longer than that. And right now we have an extreme shortage in entitled land. Entitled land is lots that are ready to be built upon. And the process of entitling land is you go out and you buy farmland, and you have to go through all the permit process to get that approved for a subdevelopment. And on average throughout the country, that takes about 4 years. In California, it takes almost 7 or more, sometimes longer if there's problems. Then you have horizontal development. That's putting the sewer, the electricity, building the roads, doing all the excavation work. That takes about 1 year. And then you have a year to build the house. And those three processes are generally done many times by different companies. And you have a land banking company that does the entitlement work. Then you sell it off to a developer who does the horizontal developing. They may do the vertical. They may not. They may sell it off to a company to do the vertical development. So you have transition time in between there. That whole system was stopped during the Great Recession. So there was no land being entitled. There was no horizontal development being done. So when you so if you look at the process of taking 7-8 years from farmland to house, you stop it for 4 years, it's going to take 3 or 4 years to start back up again. We built about 900,000 homes in the country last year. We're going to build about 900,000 homes in the country this year. We need 1.5 to keep up with population growth. Next year, we will probably only build about 1.1 homes. And the reason that we just don't go out and build 1.5 million homes is because there's no land. There's not enough land to do it. And that's going to be a persistent problem for the next 3 to 4 years.
Sounds like it's no longer necessary to have a crystal ball. I mean, if you've got your equations and you've got your knowledge of what's going on, then you can, in a way, predict when it's time to get out.
It's on a macro scale when it's – I don't like to predict when it's time to get out or when it's time to get in. I like to look at it more as the risk level of owning that asset class is less than normal or greater than normal instead of just trying to time it.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dave Martin, financial consultant with AISG. His number directly, 858-444-6195. That's the number, 858-444-6195. When we come back, we're going to pose the question, where do you think the real estate market goes from here? We've touched on it a little bit, but we're going to ask him directly ahead of us when we come back.
The law is on your side. That's right. The laws are designed to protect consumers from being riddled with debt. They're designed that way so that you can become debt-free and get a fresh start. You should do what I did. When I had financial stress, I called William McDonald with the McDonald Legal Group. Find out how you can use the law to your advantage. Delete your debt and keep your stuff. You got credit card debt, timeshares, old IRS debt, collections, medical bills, any of this stuff can be wiped away with the Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and it only takes 100 days. Call William McDonald today. 800-997-1235. 800-997-1235. Or go online, sandiegobankruptcy.us. 800-997-1235.
This is Lisa with the McDonald Legal Group. We are a debt relief agency. We help people file for bankruptcy relief under the bankruptcy code.
Mr. Credit here for Five Star Escrow. When you need escrow services, think Five Star, the escrow provider to the friends of the Mr. Credit Show. FiveStarEscrow.com. That's 5starescrow.com.
Just having an estate plan or trust in place isn't always enough to make difficult times less challenging for you and your family. Life is full of change. This is why it's so important to have your estate documents reviewed regularly. Contact my attorney, Jared Causa, with Neil Diamant Law Firm, and find out if a review of your estate plan is needed. 619-238-1712. Since life changes so quickly, make sure your estate is properly handled. 619-238-1712 for your free consultation. Just mention Mr. Credit. 619-238-1712.
If you're a responsible homeowner who's faithfully made your mortgage payments, you deserve thanks for doing the right thing. And I'd like to tell you about a powerful financial tool that rewards your responsibility. Hi, I'm Jay Farner, president of Quicken Loans. And the tool that I'm talking about is the Home Affordable Refinance Program, or HARP. HARP is designed to help you lower your mortgage payments. It's for responsible homeowners who are current on their payments, but due to the housing market, may have little or no equity left in their home. And even if you were unable to get a HARP loan in the past, new guidelines mean that now you may be eligible. Over 2.5 million homeowners have already taken advantage of HARP and are saving an average of $250 a month. If you're one of the millions yet to take advantage, call us today at 800-QUICKEN. To learn more, call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That number again is 800-QUICKEN.
Important terms and conditions apply. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
If your service is 5 stars, your escrow partner should be too. 5-Star Escrow. Getting your transactions closed and getting you paid. 5starescrow.com. 5starescrow.com.
So happy it's Thursday. Welcome back. ESPN 1700 AM. It's a Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin.
And myself, Ryan White. If you're just tuning in, we were listening to Dave Martin, financial consultant with AISG. His number is 858-444-6195. That's his number, 858-444-6195. We briefly touched on, well, the main, really not really causes, but really you mentioned one big one that was the main cause for the real estate decline, and it was credit. Really talked about the credit cycle and utilizing that to predict where we're heading. Where do you think the real estate market goes from here?
I think real estate right now is a fair valuation. It's not overpriced, not underpriced. You know, the best time to buy obviously would have been 2 years ago.
Sure.
We've seen big gains since then. But I think you have to understand what the real benefit to owning real estate is long term.
Okay.
And the real benefit is the protection against inflation. And you can make a case that real estate really never goes up.
What?
In real terms, it never goes up. That what actually happens is the dollar goes down.
Oh, I love this conversation.
It's depressing.
Well, I mean, because everybody feels like their real estate's going up in value, right? I mean, so if we wrap our mind around the fact that buying real estate could simply be a hedge against the depreciating dollar.
Absolutely. It's one of the best hedges there is. Imagine if tomorrow you woke up and everything doubled.
Not hard to think about that.
Home value doubled, but also the cost of milk doubled. Your utility bill doubled. Gasoline doubled. All your expenses doubled. But your value of your home doubled. And your income also doubled also. So, in effect, you're living the same lifestyle. It's just the numbers are twice as big. You go to work, you pay for gas, you get used to the numbers, but you're living the same lifestyle, nothing's changed. But in that same scenario, your mortgage didn't double. It stayed the same. And your mortgage payment stayed the same. So you've effectively cut your mortgage in half. And that's what happens over time with inflation. Inflation has an effect, pays your mortgage down as it devalues your mortgage.
So in a way, you're looking into the future with that analogy, right? So what, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, everything's going to be double? Isn't that kind of what we're saying?
About 20 to 25 years of the current inflation rate.
So if you get a 30-year mortgage and you lock your interest rate and you lock your payment, in 20 years, everything else doubled in this little scenario, except your mortgage payment is now that lower payment.
Absolutely.
It's still that lower payment.
That so lower payment.
Essentially, you've hedged against depreciation.
Against inflation. You've hedged against inflation. You're unaffected. The biggest expense you have is unaffected by inflation.
It's great. I mean, if you own a home for a long period of time,
that's the real value.
Talk to some of these people, their payments are like $1,000 on $1 million house. And the new guy comes along, his taxes are astronomical.
$1,000 a month. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And his mortgage payment is what, $6,000-$7,000 a month, you know. So there's your hedge right there.
And that's the real reason you want to own real estate. That same scenario. Tomorrow everything doubles, the renter, his rent doubles.
Sure.
So
ouch.
He's received no benefit from hedging against the inflation and the declining dollar over time. Now, if you would get into a period like the 70s where you have super normal inflation, that could happen in 10 years instead of 20 or 25. And it did happen in about 10 years during the 70s.
So your everything doubling scenario is not really hypothetical. It happens. It just happens over time.
It absolutely happens.
It doesn't happen tomorrow.
It's not even a risk. It's going to happen. It happens every year.
Got it. And 20-ish years is our guess for doubling.
20 to 25 years on average. If we run it at about a 3% inflation rate over the next 20 years, that's about
it. I would have to imagine there's other things you could invest in that would hedge against inflation.
Absolutely. And that's one of the real risks of you look at the mortgage getting cut in half over 20 years. Well, bonds do the same thing. So if you bought a treasury bond that was yielding 5% and you spent that 5% that it was paying out, when 20 years later, when you're paid the principal off in that treasury bond again, it's worth half as much as it was when you bought it.
Sure.
Through inflation. Sure. So you have to look at the inflation in your investment portfolio too. There's risk in everything. There's risk. There's tremendous inflation risk in bonds.
Do you find a lot of your clients are putting money away for 20 years down the road, like you just described?
You have to think about long term. You have to come up with long-term strategies.
So those are some of the strategies you would employ for your clients?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Hedging against inflation is, frankly, a fairly rare one. I haven't heard a whole lot of talk about that of recent.
We haven't had a lot of inflation recently. I mean, inflation's been pretty tame over the last, over the last decade, certainly.
And are we expecting to see it increase?
Well, you can do the math, and certainly there's inflation hawks out there that think you watch the gold commercials on TV, mm-hmm. and they say the world's coming to an end. We're going to have huge inflation like the 70s. The government debt at record levels, that's inflationary. How the Fed controls that long term, still uncertain.
Yeah, there are a lot of pitfalls out there. You know, I mean, interest rates are one of them. You know, history may repeat itself, like you had mentioned, and interest rates may get to double digits. You know, the way I see it is that, you know, get in real estate. I mean, obviously I'm a real estate agent, but I clearly see now once you're in and you begin that hedge against inflation, even if you sold and moved up, you've still locked in your hedge against that inflation to an extent because now your house theoretically has increased in value based on the fact that the dollar decreased in value.
Exactly.
So if you go out and buy a bunch of other rental properties, all these little cupcakes you have out there, they're all hedges against this inflation. In fact, if you do enough of it, you'll hedge yourself right out to where you can retire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And real estate's always been one of the best hedges against inflation. I even believe it's much better than gold. Gold really, in my opinion, isn't really an inflation hedge. It's more of a fear hedge than an inflation hedge. Because gold doesn't do anything. It provides no income.
Right, provides no income.
And, you know, it's commonly thought as an international currency, but it's not legislated to be an international currency. People do use it as an international currency, but that doesn't mean they're going to in the future.
Right.
And if you look at the just recently when we had we were at borderline deflationary times during the Great Recession, gold was going up. Well, why would gold go up during a deflationary time? Now inflation has started kicking back up again.
Well, it went up based on that fear factor you're talking about.
It's a fear hedge more than an inflation hedge. Now when the fear subsides, but inflation is creeping back again, that we've seen recently, gold's gone down. So if it was truly an inflation hedge, and if you look historically at gold during inflationary times, it doesn't really correlate that much. It's not a one-for-one inflation hedge. Real estate is a better inflation hedge because it's really almost impossible to have inflation without having real estate inflation.
Well, I kind of wanted to reiterate your valuation model for real estate. And just one more time, hit that again. You said back in the heyday, our capitalization rate was somewhere around 3%. And by heyday, we mean when the market was high.
Right.
2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, before the bubble bursted, capitalization rate was around 3% as compared to the 10-year.
Which at the time, I think the 10-year topped out between 4.5%, 5% at the peak.
Got it. So less, nonetheless.
Oh,
less,
it was much less than the 10-year.
Than the 10-year. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so when we look at it now, we're saying, all right, the 10-year, I think you told me was 3.
Almost 3.
3-ish now. And we're talking about capitalization rates. I know you said nationwide of 6, 7.
6, 7. Varies widely
like
between regions.
Of course.
San Diego's lower.
But double.
But
right? About double the 10-year. As opposed to previously, it was half.
Previously,
that's a 4-time swing.
Absolutely.
So utilizing that model, and as you mentioned previously, it's a moderately valued now. It's not undervalued. It's not overvalued. It's moderately valued. When you compare it to what else you can make with your money, which is what you're doing, it's a good valuation at the moment. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dave Martin, financial consultant with AISG. His phone number, 858-444-6195. Again, 858-444-6195.
But, you know, I would say that if you're listening right now and you think that anything that we're talking about is controversial, right? We've kind of put a lot of things out there, made some statements out there about how long it's going to take to bring, you know, raw land to construction. And we've made some predictions based on, you know, hedging the market and real estate doesn't actually go up in value. We're hedging against inflation. If you're thinking that some of the stuff that we're talking about is just we're out of our mind, then challenge Dave Martin. Call him at 858-444-6195. And the reason I say that is because you can't find David Martin on the internet. You Google him. You can't find him. He is by referral. He does all of his business by referral, doesn't actually go out, solicit new clients. We found him living in a beautiful area and living the dream, really. And he employs the kind of financial planning in his own life that he works for his clients for. And I got to say, this guy is a wealth of knowledge. And some of the philosophies that he's got are fantastic. And real estate is not your only forte. I mean, obviously, it's part of a good portfolio that you put together for people. But what else do you recommend?
Well, real estate is an important part of a total portfolio that I adhere to with my clients. It's an asset class within itself. Many people look at their 401ks and their IRAs and their investment portfolio as stocks and bonds and those two asset classes. I think real estate is just as important asset class as those other two, and you have to take special attention to it. And all types of real estate, not just residential real estate, but also multifamily, commercial.
Yeah.
There's many different facets, and there's many different ways to invest in real estate. But certainly it's one of the better to hedge against inflation. It's not subject mostly to the volatility of the stock market, so it acts as a nice buffer.
Well, it certainly has different aspects to it. I mean, you can put your shadow on it. You can actually get out there and do things to it. You can participate in its success or not. Whereas, you know, if you're buying a stock out there, you have really very little to say about what goes on.
That's true, but there's a place for all investments. You know, I like to say there's no such thing as a good investment or a bad investment. It's just good or bad timing. And, you know, stocks aren't good or bad. Bonds aren't good or bad. Real estate isn't good or bad. A proper portfolio, you own everything and all things and diversify. And you look at the risk level of those different asset classes and not by whether it makes you feel good or feel bad at the given time. Everybody felt good in 2006 with real estate. You know, the better you feel about an asset class, usually that's time.
Walking around wearing rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, that's time where you should be the most cautious. But you look at and looking at how well they've done in the past is probably the worst way to look at them also. That's going to get you into trouble also. So you really have to look at behind the scenes and look at the data and the valuation. And, you know, an interesting story about the stock market. If you look at 1990, the earnings on the S&P was $25 for the S&P. 10 years later, it was 50. It doubled in 10 years, in a decade. And just off the top of your head, what do you think the S&P earnings did from 2000 to 2012?
Doubled?
Guessing doubled.
They doubled again. So we've had a doubling of the S&P earnings from 1990 to 2000. From 2000 to 2012, we saw another doubling of the earnings. But the decade of the 90s to the 2000s with the stock market were completely different. Completely different. Even though the earnings did about the same, did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, it was supposed to do.
So you have to look at valuation. You have to look at the internals. Part of the reason that the 2000s were so bad in the market is because the earnings doubled in 1990, but the market went up four times, doubled twice during the 90s.
So I've got a
portfolio.
So
it took us a decade to give it back.
So if, basically, to look at the internals, that's what I need someone like you for.
Absolutely.
So if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dave Martin. He's a financial consultant with AISG. His number, 858-444-6195. That's the number, 858-444-6195. And when we come back, we're going to talk about interest rates and how they're going to take effect to moving the real estate market in one direction or another. I know everybody's aware, or if you're not, become aware. They just went up about a point, and maybe that slowed things down here in the near term. We'll figure out what's going to happen in the future with respect to that when we come back.
Hi, Credit Repair Mike here. I'm very happy to be the only credit repair company recommended by Mr. Credit, and I hope the information I've brought to the show has helped you in some way. Right now, our company is growing so rapidly that we are looking to hire more sales agents immediately. So if you know someone who is out of work and wants to make some extra money, we have both full-time and part-time positions available. Our credit repair program is only $4.99 per person. Yes, $4.99 per person, no matter what. And we have a money-back guarantee. The program sells itself. That's why Mr. Credit recommends us. Because you can't get full-service credit repair this cheap from anywhere else. Call me, Credit Repair Mike, at 1-800-525-1349 to find out more. That's 1-800-525-1349. Or go to creditrepairmike.com. Creditrepairmike.com. That's creditrepairmike.com.
January 1st, health insurance is changing for all of us. So how is your insurance going to change? Will you be forced to buy a new policy or change your existing one? What are your options? Craig Gusson with Auerbach & Gusson is a certified health reform specialist who can help answer these questions today at no cost to you. Just call 858-546-4101. That's 858-546-4101 to learn everything you need to know about health reform. 858-546-4101.
Golic, you know how you've given me a hard time about my taste for fusion cuisine?
Yes.
Well, you're about to change your tune.
We've already got like a million different countries' foods to choose from. Why do you need to fusion them?
I'm not getting into that now. I just wanted to share with you that I've got a fusion food you can't say no to.
My hand is hovering over the no button.
Fusing bacon into a burger.
Okay, I'm listening.
Johnsonville has taken the flavors you obviously love way too much and used them to create a 1/3-pound gourmet burger. They're Johnsonville Grillers. They come in great flavors like cheddar and bacon and Swiss and mushroom.
Wait, bacon and cheese in a burger? I could do this.
Yeah, so now you agree with me. Fusion cooking is a good idea.
No, Johnsonville Grillers are a good idea. Seaweed lasagna is stupid.
Go to Johnsonville.com to read more about Johnsonville Grillers. Served with pride since 1945.
This is John Feinstein with a CBS Sports Minute, brought to you by Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. Now that Derek Jeter's nightmare 2013 baseball season is officially over, the question will be raised about whether his storied career is over. Here's betting that it's not. If there's one thing that sets truly great athletes apart from those who are merely very good, it's drive. While the very best may want to make every possible dollar they can, their will to win goes beyond cashing their mammoth checks. Jeter's in that category. If he walks away today, he'll be voted into the Hall of Fame the first minute that he's eligible and will go down in the Yankees' storied pantheon in the same sentence as Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio, Mantle, Ford, Berra, and Rivera. That won't be good enough. He's going to come back. He'll want to walk into the sunset, not limp into it. I'm John Feinstein.
If you're a responsible homeowner who's faithfully made your mortgage payments, you deserve thanks for doing the right thing. And I'd like to tell you about a powerful financial tool that rewards your responsibility. Hi, I'm Jay Farner, president of Quicken Loans, and the tool that I'm talking about is the Home Affordable Refinance Program, or HARP. HARP is designed to help you lower your mortgage payments. It's for responsible homeowners who are current on their payments, but due to the housing market, may have little or no equity left in their home. And even if you were unable to get a HARP loan in the past, new guidelines mean that now you may be eligible. Over 2.5 million homeowners have already taken advantage of HARP and are saving an average of $250 a month. If you're one of the millions yet to take advantage, call us today at 800-QUICKEN. To learn more, call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That number again is 800-QUICKEN.
Important terms and conditions apply. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number
3030.
Hi, it's Colin Cowherd. You're listening to ESPN Radio 1700. Catch me weekdays at 7 a.m. ESPN Radio 1700.
So happy it's Thursday. Welcome to ESPN 1700 AM Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. In studio with us today, Dave Martin, financial consultant with AISG. His number is 858-444-6195. One more time, 858-444-6195. We talked a little bit about where the real estate market has been and where it's going with respect to the decline. And now we're going to talk a little about how interest rates, and I guess it's going to be higher interest rates. I don't see any lower interest rates coming anytime soon.
So, I think that's an easy call.
Yeah, the expectation that higher interest rates are in our future, how is that going to affect, well, not just the real estate market, but the market in general?
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk about the real estate market first. I think that if we go into inflationary times, and that's what would cause interest rates to go up, well, and we're in a real estate shortage where there's just physically not enough homes for people to live in, higher interest rates may damper demand for purchases, but you also have the rental side of the equation. And if less people are purchasing homes and more people are renting them, and we don't have enough homes for everyone, then you're going to start seeing inflationary pressure on rents. Which we're already seeing that. Vacancy rates are almost at a historical low right now.
Sure. The owner can raise rents and
they can raise rents and everything else. And so if that asset is cash flowing at a higher level, that will reflect back into value. So it really doesn't matter whether the demand is for rent or the demand is for home ownership. The values will rise if we have a shortage of homes.
Yes.
So if interest rates go up and mortgage rates go up, then I think home ownership will not improve as well as it would have if it hadn't done that. But we'll see more inflation in rent, which will bring prices up.
Your example of your P.E. ratio,
mm-hmm.
and it increases. When you talk about an increase in rent in this shortage of rental property, you're talking about an increase in your P.E. ratio.
An increase in the cap rate stays the same. If you get like the example I gave before, if you buy a $100,000 house and the rent is $10,000, net rent is $10,000, you're at a 10 cap. If that house goes to $200,000 and that rent stays the same, you're at a 5 cap. But if that rent also goes to $20,000,
right. You balanced out.
Your cap rate is the same.
Out. Right.
So
it makes real estate, in this case, a good investment.
Absolutely. If the shortage, interest rates I don't think are going to have an effect long term on real estate values. I think you have to look at the shortage. The biggest component that I look at is the scarcity of finished lots, the scarcity of entitled land, and the 3 years it's going to take before we get that back. They started entitling land about a year ago again, but we're going to have to wait till that comes online.
Well, so let me make sure I understand what you're saying. And you're talking on a national level. A national level. You're suggesting that, yes, of course, higher interest rates is going to hamper home values from increasing. But the higher interest rate is overshadowed by the fact there's a lack of inventory.
Yes.
Yes. And the lack of inventory is a more important factor in the equation than a mere 1% bump in rate.
Absolutely. You look at during the heyday, when everyone was buying three houses and, you know, and builders were building into that demand that was a false demand, it was a speculative demand, we were put in a situation where we had way too many homes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fed took mortgage rates to historic low rates. What happened? Did real estate come ripping back again? No, it didn't. It kept going down. So on the way down, interest rates had no effect whatsoever. Government programs had no effect whatsoever. Nothing had any impact. There was only one way that to solve the real estate mess that we were in is that we had to wait. We had to wait till the population grew into the supply.
And nobody wants to wait.
And we're there now. So everything that the Fed tried to do had no impact whatsoever. We had to wait.
So if that is the case, that it is going to be the lack of supply that is going to continue to drive prices up, and based on your entitlement scenario, we're 3 to 4 years until that supply is available, that would mean that we're going to see increases for at least the next 3 to 4 years in terms of value to some degree, regardless of interest rate. And
regardless.
I say somewhat, because obviously if it takes it to 20, you know, that's going to change things. But a percent here or there isn't going to be the determining factor.
I don't believe so. And the point I wanted to make, too, is it doesn't matter if someone buys a home or rents a home when there's a shortage. Both cause values to go up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're either increasing the cash flow so investors are more inclined to buy it, or you're increasing demand for private homes, and when there's a shortage, that causes prices to go up.
Well, with that said, what about the baby boomers? I mean, are they going to move off into retirement communities and maybe create a more housing than demand?
I think that, well, the baby boomers are, you know, I don't think that has an impact. They may change their, you know, what type of home they own. But on a macro scale, I don't think that it's going to have that big of an impact. I think what's going to have a bigger impact is the echo boom. And the echo boom is a bubble in our population that's 22 years old right now. That's why you can't get into college right now. It's so hard to get into college because we have this huge bubble in our population that's 22 right now. And it tails off dramatically. That's why they're tearing down grade schools. And they're shutting down grade schools because they built them up through that big bubble in the population that's coming through. And now, what is that bubble going to be doing 5 years from now? They're going to be buying homes. They're
getting married.
They're going to be renting apartments. So it's this huge bubble in the population that's going to have more of an impact on our economy than
just in time for the supply to increase.
Well, just in time for that 15-year cycle to be a cycle once again.
Right.
And then we go through that recession, if you will.
But even after they get the entitled property up to a level to sustain building 1.5 million homes a year, we're still have gone through 3 years where we haven't built 1.5.
Still pent up demand. Sure. So,
and this is very regional too. Some areas there isn't. Some areas you can entitle property in 6 months.
Well, he talked about Texas, right?
Yep.
You talked about Texas.
Texas is easier than most areas, but it's still in major metropolitan areas. Still takes 4 years. And the other aspect of that too is where you need the housing is the major metropolitan areas,
of course it is.
Which is the hardest places to entitle land.
Yeah, you don't need it on the farmland.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned that, you know, the change in interest rates and what the Fed was doing with interest rates isn't the biggest determining factor in the values increasing, and more so the availability or supply. And it kind of seems like one of the problems maybe with that 7-year time frame is that's more on the local level. That's up to the state and county level to go through the entitlement as opposed to the feds. And maybe they don't have as big of a picture as far as what their 7-year process is doing on the whole system.
The Fed really doesn't try to control, you know, they're...
Well, that's what I'm saying. The Fed isn't involved in that entitlement stuff.
The Fed isn't involved in it at all. And the Fed's job is to outweigh unemployment to inflation and try to balance the two out. And, you know, publicly they say they don't care about the stock market. They don't care about the real estate market. So that's their objective. And so, and typically interest rates and mortgage rates don't have that big of an impact on home values. We've gone through periods of rising interest rates during times all throughout the last cycle, and it really never had a material effect on interest rate, on home values. until the last one.
The last one. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Dave Martin. He's a financial consultant with AISG. His number, 858-444-6195. That's his number, 858-444-6195. When we come back, we're going to discuss future investors and where they should be revisiting their asset allocation strategy. This is right up Dave's alley. Ahead of us when we come back.
Need some water?
Hi, Mr. Credit here. I can't tell you how excited I am to have Bruce McPherson with Security One Lending as a regular guest on the show and my go-to guy for reverse mortgages. Listen, if you're 62 years or older and you own a home, whether you have a mortgage or not, chances are you can benefit from one of today's HECM reverse mortgage options. Just call Bruce McPherson at 866-223-7174. That's 866-223-7174. You can just email reversemortgagebruce@gmail.com. Over the past 9 years, Bruce has really earned his reputation as an honest, ethical reverse mortgage advisor, and he's someone I genuinely trust, and you can too. Don't let old myths about reverse mortgages keep you from calling to get the facts. Today's government-insured HECM reverse mortgages are incredibly flexible, whether you need money now or just want to be prepared for the future. Call your local expert, Bruce McPherson, today and get all the answers you need for free. 866-223-7174. That's 866-223-7174, or just email reversemortgagebruce@gmail.com. Five-star escrow, the service you deserve when you need it most at closing. Five-star escrow, fast, friendly, and accurate. Why would you settle for less? Fivestarescrow.com. That's fivestarescrow.com. Have you been selected for an audit by the IRS? Do you owe the IRS money and want to find a way to settle your account as quickly and easily as possible? Hi, Mr. Credit here. Listen, I had the IRS come knocking on my door over $600, which I didn't even owe them as it turns out. I know how scary this stuff can be. The good news is I know exactly what to do. My tax attorney, Jeffrey Kahn, is board certified and works only on tax-related issues. He understands how the IRS works and how to make the most of each situation. And get this, mention Mr. Credit when you call and get a free consultation and a tax resolution plan, $500 value, absolutely free. Call Jeffrey Kahn today at 866-494-6829. That's 866-494-6829 today and get these tax issues behind you as quickly as possible. 866-494-6829. That's 866-494-6829.
Okay, listen, kickoff is in about 15 minutes. I've got some medium rare burgers that are ready to go.
Oh, this really is a fantastic barbecue.
Yeah, a little more people than we were expecting, though.
I'll have a medium well. I'm happy to wait.
Okay, baby, we are officially out of burgers.
Okay, you know half of these people haven't even eaten yet. Wait, is that a police helicopter?
They might have received some complaints. There's quite a traffic jam in the cul-de-sac, my friend.
Attention, this is the police. Do you have any of those brats with the habanero and chicken apple sausage? Put two in the basket and back away slowly. Pretty please.
Everyone's a fan when you grill for game day with Kingsford Charcoal. Don't forget the Kingsford Charcoal and everything else you'll need to throw the ultimate game day tailgate party in your backyard. Available at Walmart for a low price every day.
Para resultados y más información acerca de este programa, consultar la página espnradio1700.com.
Welcome back, ESPN 1700 AM. It's a Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin,
and myself, Ryan White. Talking to Dave Martin, financial consultant with AISG. His number is 858-444-6195, 858-444-6195. We just went through interest rates and how an increase in interest rates is or isn't going to change the housing values. And Dave broke it down for us very simply that it really comes down to supply and demand, not necessarily the interest rate. So again, if you'd like to reach out to Dave, 858-444-6195.
And we're also talking about the fact that we're not talking about month to month here, right? I mean, because we did see a rate increase, and you know, maybe it's a seasonal issue, maybe it's the rate increase, but frankly, you know, we saw a higher demand for homes 3 months ago than we currently see now. However, I'm not seeing my homeowners drop the price of their homes. It's just taking a little bit longer to sell. They still sell. In fact, I think homes are still appreciating. But we've got an increase in interest rate. It's simply cooled off in these last 3 months.
Well, it was red hot before, too. And supply
was
really
too
low.
Far.
Really
it
low.
It went too far.
And supply is still low. It's not as low as it was before, but supply is still
lower.
Lower.
People become more distracted with getting kids back in school. At some point, football is going to kick in, right? That's always going to college and pros, both Saturday and Sunday. Soon, daylight savings time. You leave work, it's going to be dark outside. Nobody's going to go shopping for home when it's dark. There's, of course, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas that all play a part. So traditionally, this is the slow time of the year, if we are to have a slow time in San Diego.
Slower.
Uh-huh. So as promised, asset allocation strategy. This is something that you specialize in. And actually, you have a very bold statement to make about asset allocation and your particular industry. But revisiting it is really one of the things you're going to talk about, revisiting your asset allocation strategy.
Yeah, thank you. I think that asset allocation is a key component to investment planning. But traditionally...
Well, let me stop you right there. What does that mean?
Asset allocation means you're going to... Traditionally, it means... in most 401ks or people's portfolio, you're going to put a certain percentage of allocation in bonds and a certain percentage allocation in stocks. The older you are, the more you're going to put your allocation into bonds and less into stocks.
And why is that?
Because you're closer to retirement, you want to be more conservative as you get older.
Bonds are looked upon as a more secure investment.
It's looked upon as a more conservative, secure investment.
Got it. Okay.
I believe that in my practice, we like to add real estate in there also as a third portion of asset allocation. And the way that I do my asset allocations differently than other advisors is you can't only look at the investor's risk tolerance level to formulate your asset allocation plan. You also have to look at the changing risk in different asset classes. You can't just say, you're 50 years old, you need to put 60% in bonds and 40% in stocks and leave it there.
Like the fire and forget philosophy.
Yeah, exactly. The do it and forget. Yeah. And then manage the assets within those asset classes. I think you have to look at the changing risk of asset classes and change the model accordingly. Are stocks more risky than they normally are, less risky than they normally are? Are bonds more risky or less risky? Is real estate more risky or less risky?
So at the time I'm actually putting my certain percentage into bonds, what is the actual risk of bonds at that moment? Not historically what have they been, but what are they right now in terms of risk?
Bonds right now I think are high risk.
But I'm saying that's what you're
yes,
identifying.
Mm-hmm.
Is
you're identifying.
Not historically bonds are conservatively low risk, but you're looking at what the risk is right now with that particular investment.
Exactly.
And as you just mentioned, you feel bonds are high risk. And I would think one of the benefits you can bring to the table is discerning where the risk levels are, because we can all kind of use a formula to decide what our risk tolerance is. But how does that then translate into – as you just mentioned, bonds are high risky now. That takes a second level of thinking and consideration to determine
exactly
what is risky.
Instead of looking at track record, you know, what a fund has done over the last 5 years, I think you have to look at the details of the investment, like in bonds. I think you have to look at the current rate compared to inflation. You know, on a 2-year treasury right now is a little bit below 0.5%. Well, inflation's at 2.5. So you're losing 2% a year on a 2-year. You're going to lose 4% over the 2 years if inflation stays at this level. That's a hard loss, and you're never going to make it back up.
Is that what you mean by risky or just stupid?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'll let you make that call.
If you've got the keys to the kingdom, but I mean, you see it clearly here.
Yeah.
Why would anybody not move it? Is that that fire and forget philosophy where they're just like,
it is.
You know?
I think it is.
You know, I just bury your head in the sand and just, like, let it go?
Well, and that's the revisit part that he's talking about.
You look at the 10-year treasury 6 months ago when it was 1.5. We were running inflation at 2%, the 1.5% treasury. You're going to lose 0.5% a year to inflation for 10 years.
So you don't advertise. You can't find you on the internet because you're by referral. And so if someone was to allocate some assets to you, how often do you really look at what's going on to make sure that that portfolio is handled right?
Well, I meet with my – it varies widely, but I meet with my clients on average at least once a quarter. Some clients I meet every month. But I'm constantly looking at the portfolio on a macro level and on a micro level and every day. And, you know, some of the concepts are more of a macro level. You know, bonds are very – in my opinion, bonds are very risky right now. So if you're in a – if your asset allocation model is your 60% bonds and that's your core, why would you want to be 60 – you need to find other alternatives when bond yields are so low right now. And the opposite – you know, the other things are true too with the stock market. The stock market is overvalued. At the end of the 90s. You had a price-to-earnings ratio on the S&P of 28. You've gone up 400%. You know, that's the historically high price-to-earnings ratio. If your asset allocation model is 60% equities, why would you want to keep it?
Right.
You know, you have to revisit it.
So in the real estate example, so you let's just say you have a cap rate of 6% and you see a 10-year treasury at 5%. You talk to your client, you say, hey, look, you know, it's positive here by 1%. However, it seems to me that we're moving in the wrong direction here. This asset may need to be sold, moved around. This is the kind of conversation you'd have with your clients?
Absolutely. Absolutely. With, you know, like, for instance, right now, bonds, in my opinion, are very risky. Very low yields, high degree of inflation risk, and high degree of interest rate risk. When interest rates go up, bonds go down. So you're stuck in a position where you have a loss if you sold. If you held them to maturity, you'd get your money back. But inflation's going to eat that away. And if it takes you 5-10 years, then...
Doesn't sound like a good option.
It doesn't sound like a good option. So you incorporate real estate and equities. And within those two asset classes, there's many different levels of risk. I'm not telling everyone...
Or hands-on, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could buy into a tenant in common maybe, right?
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's one of the unique things about your strategy is not necessarily timing the market, which is what you said many times. It was allocating risk and determining the appropriate risk of those specific allocations.
And then incorporating that in an asset allocation plan for the client's risk tolerance.
And why is timing the market? I mean, we would think historically timing the market's the way we want to go about it. Why doesn't that work?
It doesn't work. You look at, I'll give you, for instance, one of the key components that I look at is the yield curve as far as the stock market goes. Two of the main components is yield curve and months of housing inventory. So if you look at, we generally, if the short-term rates, and 10-year treasury, all the treasury market is really, you can look at it as a predictor of future inflation. So if the 10-year yield is a predictor of the future inflation over the next 10 years, and the 2-year yield is a prediction over the last 2 years. If the 10-year is longer, is a higher yield than the 2-year, then the expectation from the market is that inflation is going to be greater over the next 10 years than it is currently. Well, how do you have greater inflation over a 10-year time frame? You have to grow the economy. So a steep yield curve generally says you're going to have a growing economy. A flat or an inverted yield curve where short-term rates are higher than 10-year or 20-year treasury, that means current inflation is higher than long-term inflation. How do you get there? You have a contracting economy.
Sounds complicated for sure, but Dave knows. Dave Martin, financial consultant, AISG. His number, 858-444-6195. Again, 858-444-6195. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Tim Stromble with Sports Court.
Student loan debt in the United States is now larger than credit card debt, coming in at over $1 trillion. The good news is there is a company I know very well that's helping people lower monthly payments on student loans every single day. I have a personal friend that I referred to this company. He had over $20,000 in federal student loan debt and was making payments of more than $150 a month. He was able to get his payment down to $45 a month. And also, any balance remaining after the 300 payments may be completely forgiven. Call 877 927 6864 and ask about the free guide, 8 Secrets on How to Lower Student Loan Payments. It's 100% free. 877-927-6864. Student loan relief is real, and I want you to have it today. 877-927-6864 is the number. That's 877-927-6864. If you are considering a short sale or letting your home go to foreclosure, please listen carefully. There are laws in place to protect you and ways that you can get out of a bad real estate situation completely unharmed in almost every single case. But here's the important thing. Time is of the essence. I will help you 100% free on how to handle a short sale or foreclosure on your home while eliminating the damage done to your wallet. But I need you to call as soon as possible so we have all potential options available to you. Okay, this is the key. Call 888-888-0154. It's 888-888-0154, and just leave a message with your contact info and brief synopsis of the situation. That's it. It won't cost you a dime, but could save you a bundle. I don't want you to become one of those horror stories I hear about every day from people who didn't call me until it was too late. I'm doing it for free because it's my job. Let me do my job. Call 888-888-0154 right now for all the information you need to do what's best for you and your family with regard to your real estate. 888-888-0154. That's 888-888-0154.
Cesar Camacho, president of the PRI. The energy amendment means a transformation for Mexico. It means that you will pay less for electricity and gas. It means that there will be more job opportunities for you. In this amendment and in any other, Pemex will not be privatized because